Good morning, Cascadia. You're listening to your community radio station, KBOO Portland, Oregon, at 90.7 FM. Today is Thursday, May 28, 2009, and this is Air Cascadia, long on content, short on time. I'm Chris Andre.
And I'm William Delta.
About 75 to 100 single-payer activists surrounded Congressman Earl Blumenauer's office yesterday afternoon.
The strange twist in the RNC 8 case made possible by an informant's sleight of hand.
And Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner is on his way to China to reassure our huge creditor that America is going to straighten up and fly right. Really? No. This time for sure. We need it.
Yeah. Portland area weather, mostly sunny today and beautiful. Chance of thunderstorms in the afternoon. Temperatures in the mid-80s. Tonight, partly cloudy. Lows in the 50s and fabulous for the next few days.
And first we go to regional news from around Cascadia. For a week now, we've been bringing you updates on the fight to stop out-of-state financial interests from using Oregon as a huge conduit, funneling money to banks all over the world and natural gas to California. There are so many things wrong with the whole LNG idea that protests have drawn people from virtually every sector of the population. Today is the Northwest Natural Shareholders meeting, and with us to talk about that is Dan Sears with Columbia Riverkeeper. Good morning, Dan.
Good morning, Chris.
Thank you so much for being with us. I do a lot of programming around this issue. It's very important, and it's important for so many reasons. Can you briefly, for listeners, review why it is so important to pay careful attention to the whole LNG debate?
Well, I think you laid it out fairly well at the opening of your question, which is, you know, is Oregon going to become a conduit for foreign fossil fuels, high-carbon fossil fuels, to California? And that's essentially what Northwest Natural Gas has proposed, along with other partners in the Bradwood LNG and Palomar pipeline combination. There are hundreds, if not thousands, of people who are directly impacted by these projects, and people should be very concerned about loss of farmland, loss of productive forest land, and particularly the impact of the Mountain National Forest. That's really going to be a focus of the message to the shareholders today, is, you know, Northwest Natural shouldn't be in the business of decimating some of the most beautiful areas of the Mountain National Forest.
Driving up the Clackamas River, can you give us an idea of what people would see should the Palomar pipeline actually go through?
Yeah, there's a couple of places where you'd see it. Just on the far side of the Ribblebrook Ranger Station, you'd see the crossing where they would be clearing 120-foot wide minimum right-of-way through old-growth trees.
That's wide. That means on either side of the pipeline for hundreds of miles. What is it, 124 miles, is it?
It's a 220-mile pipeline, yeah, and about 45 miles of it go through the Mount Hood National Forest.
And 100 feet on either side of that. That's enormous.
So the overall right-of-way would be 120 feet cleared at a minimum. And in some areas where it's very steep, they would have larger clearings. That also would occur in areas that are designated for wild and scenic protection, including Fish Creek, which was just designated as a wild and scenic river by the U.S. Congress. When they made that designation, I really don't think they had in mind that they would be seeing a 120-foot wide clear cut through that drainage, you know, within you know, months or a year. And so we think that the proposed Palomar pipeline is spatially inconsistent with the environmental laws that protect the Mountain National Forest.
What about property rights? What's this going to do to people, say, farmland?
This is one of the things that's been really interesting about the LNG issue. It's brought together people from very diverse walks of life in Oregon. There are hundreds of farmers and forest landowners who are very concerned about the impact of their own businesses, you know, their rural agricultural businesses. And they're looking at also a 120-foot wide area of disruption and a permanent 50-foot right-of-way through their farms and forests. That would be, you know, again, a permanent disruption to their farming livelihood or their forestry operation. And so we'll have some of those people here today in Portland to participate in a rally in front of the convention center. Try to get the word out to Northwest Natural Gas shareholders that people really do oppose these projects.
And exactly how is Northwest Natural involved in this?
Northwest Natural is one of two key investors in the Palomar pipeline. Northwest Natural has also been involved in the Bradwood LNG project. These two projects are joined, so there would be an LNG terminal on the Columbia River connecting to a 220-mile pipeline all the way through Western Oregon and over the Cascades. So Northwest Natural is one of the key proponents and also an investor in these projects.
It's ironic to me that the argument is that we need LNG terminals and pipelines because Oregon needs natural gas. Well, if we need it, why are we building a pipeline through the state to California? That doesn't make no one ever asks these things, I've noticed, at various hearings.
It's a good point. And one of the things that we've noted lately is that, you know, there's the vast majority of the pipeline capacity in the Palomar pipeline is committed to importing LNG and pushing it all the way through to the California-bound Trans-Canada pipeline. We're very concerned about that. We think that Oregon doesn't need liquefied natural gas. One of the important things to remember is LNG is so much more polluting than domestic gas. It's, you know, 30% worse than domestic gas supply. So when this gets pitched as a green bridge to a new energy future, people should really look at it as a step in the wrong direction.
In other words,
LNG will increase our greenhouse gas emissions.
If it's a step to a more sustainable energy future, that means is that it's already obsolete before we even build it, because the idea is that we're going in a different direction in 30 years.
Exactly. This is, you know, we just don't think this is the time for Northwest Natural Gas to be investing ratepayer dollars in a long-term commitment to more foreign fossil fuel. We think it's exactly the opposite of what Oregon wants and what Oregon farmers, foresters, fishermen, and Mount Hood advocates want.
Dan, before I let you go, can you just give listeners all the details they need to come out today and tell Northwest Natural that this is not what we want for Oregon?
Sure. It's going to be a fun event. We're just going to have people out in front of the convention center. With all the shareholders will be inside, and we're going to have people right in front of the Oregon Convention Center on Martin Luther King. So come on out. It'll start at 1 p.m., and we invite everybody to come and attend and bring a sign, and we'll be trying to inform shareholders about the negative impacts of this project.
Thank you so much for that. My guest has been Dan Sears with Columbia Riverkeeper. Thank you, Dan.
Thank you, Chris.
About 75 to 100 single-payer activists surrounded Congressman Blumenauer's Portland office yesterday afternoon. They insisted that the congressman join 77 of his colleagues in the House and sign on to H.R. 676. The protest was organized by Single Payer Action and included doctors, nurses, and activists from Physicians for National Health Program, Portland Jobs with Justice Healthcare Committee, and local unions.
Finally, we're going to get a gas tax, but possibly for all the wrong reasons. The Oregon House yesterday endorsed a 6 cents a gallon gasoline tax increase to help pay for a transportation package that's expected to create thousands of jobs in the midst of Oregon's deep recession. The $300 million a year package, which cleared the House on a 38-22 vote, also contains increases in registration, title, and license plate fees to pay for new road and road widening projects around Oregon. And that's the clincher. That's the problem. It's for roads, for gasoline-burning engines mainly, and it's not going to be doing very much good for other types of public transportation that are a lot cleaner and would generate equally, if not more, jobs. And again, is it enough to pay the standing army America maintains to keep the peace in petroleum-producing nations?
Here we go, down the rat hole into a slew of split-level society, one class for the educated wealthy and another one for everyone else. Tuition and fees at Oregon public universities are expected to climb as much as 13% this fall, nearing $7,000 a year at most campuses. The seven campuses and the federal government plan to pump more money into financial aid for low-income students, making up for shrinking state aid, but that won't help students in the middle, whose families make too much to be eligible for aid, but not enough to afford rising tuition.
And the Oregon Department of Agriculture has fined five Mather County onion growers a total of $180,000 for pesticide violations. The penalties reflect the new broader authority to impose higher penalties for pesticide violations. Investigators found 18 fields with residues of products not labeled for use on onions. They were identified as abacigran and furadan. Furadan is something that comes in a number of forms in cans and bottles at your local garden center, so be sure to watch out for that. No amount of either of these products is allowed on onions. The department determined the violations stemmed from what else? Gross negligence and willful misconduct, and applied maximum penalties, therefore.
And it's not just the pesticides that cause problems. Those plastic containers used to ship and hold pesticides can really pile up. Some Washington farmers are now part of a broad-based effort to recycle the plastics into new uses, such as drain pipes, decking, and even railroad ties. And it keeps plastics and potential pesticide residue out of landfills. And there's no direct cost to farmers or businesses. The companies that make the chemicals finance the collection program.
And this from the Why Can't We Just Leave Nature Alone department. Scientists are using acoustic tags to better understand how juvenile salmon and steelhead travel from John Day Dam on the Columbia River to the Pacific Ocean. Researchers from the Pacific Northwest National Laboratory in Richland and the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, Portland District, are tagging about 240 fish each day. I didn't know we had that many fish left. Over the next several weeks to study why some young fish survive the ocean journey and others die. Or we could just take out the dams, let the rivers run free, stop agribusiness from polluting the river and leave the fish alone. That might work too.
Mm-hmm. A Cannon Beach couple is petitioning the city to allow them to keep chickens. Apparently Cannon Beach currently does not allow residents to keep livestock, bees, poultry, or other animals, except household pets. Unless they're 100 feet from any home but their own, the exception is for animals authorized for educational or entertainment purposes. Interesting possibilities.
Teach the chickens to dance. Mm-hmm. It'd be entertaining.
But John and Laura Navrock wrote to the city manager and appeared before the council asking that the city change its ordinance.
Fact is that people are going to grow their own food, no matter what the city ordinances allow or disallow. So it's a matter of get used to it, city. An Oregon man spent Memorial Day in jail after calling 911 to complain that a McDonald's worker was rude and didn't give him an orange juice he ordered. Rabin Osman of Eloy is accused of improper use of 911. I think it's a wonderful use myself. Sheriff Sergeant David Thompson says Osman wouldn't listen when deputies told him the emergency number isn't to be used for straightening out fast food orders.
University of Washington meteorologist Cliff Mass has been saying forecasters need a Doppler radar station on the Washington coast to provide earlier warning of powerful Pacific storms. Senator Maria Cantwell agrees and helps secure a $2 million down payment. The Weather Service is now asking the Obama administration for $7 million in next year's budget. And the whales are not going to like that.
Now we go to a few national stories, and we do not have either Spencer Raymond or David Rosenfeld with us today. So I have this for you that you just might want to consider. It's a very interesting and strange twist. This comes from the Minneapolis Star Tribune back on the 18th of May. This week, NPR's This American Life featured the story of FBI informant Brandon Darby. Make of that what you will. If you heard it, you'll definitely have your own thoughts and reflections on the story and the way that NPR chose to handle it. But here we find in the Minneapolis Star Tribune an amazing statement. This is again regarding the RNC-8 trial. This is a quote. A confidential informer for the FBI was sentenced Monday to 16 days of physical labor and ordered to pay a $900 fine in connection with an early morning confrontation in Minnesota in January. Andrew Durst, considered a top FBI informer in the case against eight members of an anarchist group who faced trial in September for street disruptions at the 2008 GOP National Convention, received no additional jail time beyond what he'd already served when he was sentenced by Hennepin County District Judge Dan Mabley. The hearing was marked by the unusual absence of the prosecutor, John Halla. Make of that what you will.
General Motors said today that a committee of bondholders has agreed to a sweetened deal proposed by the U.S. government. It would erase the automaker's unsecured debt in exchange for company stock. It's still probable GM will file for bankruptcy protection, though there's a small chance that the company could avoid it. The company said that it offered bondholders 10% of the stock in a newly formed GM with warrants to buy up to 15% if the bondholders agree to support the selling of the company's assets to a new company under bankruptcy court protection.
Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner will discuss the Obama administration's efforts to deal with record U.S. budget deficits in talks next week with top Chinese officials. a senior Treasury official said that Geithner stressed to the Chinese that the administration was committed to bringing down the deficits once the country has emerged from the current recession and financial crisis. Officials in China, the largest foreign holder of U.S. Treasury securities, have expressed worries about the exploding U.S. deficits, and well, they might.
Meanwhile, mortgage delinquencies hit a record high in the first quarter. 12% of homeowners with a mortgage are behind on their payments or in foreclosure as the housing crisis spreads to borrowers with good credit, and the wave of foreclosures isn't expected to crest until the end of next year. The foreclosure rate on prime fixed-rate loans doubled in the last year. It now represents the largest share of new foreclosures. Nearly 6% of fixed-rate mortgages to borrowers with good credit were in the foreclosure process. We'll see what the Chinese think about that.
Yeah. And today in Israel, Israel shrugged off a blunt U.S. call for a halt to all Jewish settlement building on occupied Palestinian land. It's the latest sign Washington is hardening its tone toward its close ally. Israel calls settlement a normal life. That's their euphemism. And the government says it's going to continue in the occupied West Bank for the foreseeable future. This is an effective rebuff to U.S. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton's declaration that President Barack Obama wants to stop all settlement activity as he pushes for the revival of stalled peace talks.
This has been Headlines and Commentary from Air Cascadia for Thursday, May 28, 2009. Today's editor is Chris Andre. Engineering is Emily Young. The KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director is Kathleen Stevenson. I'm Liam Delta.
And I'm Chris Andre. You're listening to member-supported KBOO Portland, your community radio station at 90.7 FM. Your support and your support only keeps us subverting the dominant paradigm. Thank you so much, members.
Coming up next, Flashpoints, an interview with an attorney for someone sentenced to 65 years in prison for charitable work serving Palestinians. Dr. Mads Gilbert about the brutal conditions for hundreds of thousands of displaced Tamil people, and Catherine Austin Fitz on participatory budgeting and financial permaculture.
Thanks for listening and have a good day.